Welcome to Theology in the Raw, where tough questions are raised, easy answers are avoided, Christianese cliches are mocked, and the Bible is studied with fresh eyes. This is not your grandmother's Sunday school class, folks. This is Theology in the Raw. And now, here's your host, Dr. Preston Sprinkle.
All right, welcome back to Theology in the Raw. My name is Preston Sprinkle. I'm the Vice President for Eternity Bible College's Boise Extension. And it's been a beautiful last couple days here in Boise. I'm excited for the weekend. I hope you are too. I love hanging out with my family on the weekend and playing with my kids, who know that Daddy will normally be home on Saturdays, except this Saturday I will not be home. I'm traveling to Canada today, actually, to give a series of talks at Steinbach Bible College up in Steinbach, Manitoba. Manitoba, is that what it is? In Canada, outside of Winnipeg. So I will be home late, folks. I will be home late, kids. Keep the light on, but don't stay up. I'll be home late to squeeze you in bed on Saturday night. Hopefully I'll see you early Sunday morning when we all wake up together. This is Theology in the Raw. We've been talking about the rapture. And I probably won't spend a lot of time on this question. I could spend, I guess, a lot of time if I dig back into my Bible college and study or seminary notes where I learned all about the rapture. I honestly haven't revisited this question for a rather long time. I think the last time I cracked open the books, looked at various passages, was in, let's see, I was teaching an eschatology class. It was an eschatology of the New Testament class. Eschatology just has to do with the end times. I was teaching an eschatology of the New Testament at Aberdeen University, where I was doing my doctorate over in Scotland, Aberdeen, Scotland. What year was that? 2005, maybe, when I taught a class on the eschatology of the New Testament. And that was kind of the last time I revisited these passages in some detail, because we were talking about the end times, and I was talking about different Christian views of the end times in that class in 2005. You know what's fascinating is, I know in America, or at least certain parts of Christian America, a lot of people assume the pre-tribulational rapture view is like the only view. Like, this is the biblical view. Everything else is a slippery slope to liberalism. And some people I know have never even heard of another option. You know what's fascinating is that when you go overseas, usually it's the opposite that's true. Like, when I was teaching this class at Aberdeen University in Scotland, all the people there were Christians. All the people in the class were believers, and they come from different denominations and stuff. But when I talked about the different Christian views on the end times, I dug deep into my seminary notes and mapped out the pre-tribulational rapture view as one option. I've moved on from that view. I don't believe that view anymore. But I mapped it out, and because this is what I was taught growing up, I can map it out really clearly. And I remember turning around looking at my students in Scotland, and they had the most bizarre look on their faces. I mapped out the sort of, you know, the 7 years before Jesus returns, there's going to be a rapture, and then there's going to be 7 years of tribulation. And then after this, Jesus is going to return, and there's going to be a 1,000-year reign of Christ. And I remember saying, this is one, you know, standard view of the end times. And before I can move on to talk about other views, they were staring at me like weird, like I was smoking dope or something. And they're like, well, people don't actually believe that, do they? Like, they had the most confused look on their face. Like, what? I've never heard that. Like, that just seems so weird. What about this? What about that? And then I'm like, look, I'm not saying I believe it. I'm just saying this is what a lot of people, in fact, maybe even would it be wrong to say the majority of American Christians would hold to this view? And their jaws just went to the ground thinking, what? How does that happen? Now, let me just be really clear. I'm not trying to poke fun at the view. I'm just saying that globally, this view does not have the same traction as it has had in America. also, let me say this too. I know many very smart, extremely godly people who hold to this view. So in no way am I questioning a person's intelligence who holds to this view. In no way am I for sure questioning their godliness. In fact, just a few shows ago, I talked about some people who have been heroes of mine, heroes who have shaped my thinking. And in that list of heroes, I mentioned two names, John MacArthur and Todd Bolan, both of these heroes of mine, hold to a pre-tribulational rapture view. And I could go on and on about different seminary professors, like Dr. Will Varner was a professor in my undergraduate days, and Dr. Michael Grisanti in my seminary days, and several others that have been just huge influences in my life who still hold to this view. So I don't want to demean those who hold to it. I will say, though, rather boldly, that I don't think that the biblical evidence for this view is compelling at all. Like, I don't think I think it approaches scripture in ways that I think are very unhelpful and are artificial to how we should actually interpret the biblical text. So let me say this. Let me jump to So 1 Thessalonians 4, we read yesterday, is the main passage that talks about believers being caught up in the air and meeting the Lord Jesus. But here's the thing. When I did some research on that passage over in Aberdeen University, I found out that, I'm flipping here, I'm such a dude, I can't flip the pages of the Bible and talk at the same time. So let me just find out where I'm going here, then I'll talk. Okay, here we go. 1 Thessalonians 4. 13 and following. So verse 17 says, then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will always be with the Lord. That word to meet in the first century, this Greek word, I forgot what it is actually. I don't have my Greek text here, but the Greek word that's translated meet is often used in the ancient world when delegates of a city would go out to meet an approaching king. So a king or a leader or a dignitary from another city, another country, is going to meet or going to enter into another city. And as he's approaching, people from that city come out to meet that king, that leader. But when they meet that king, then they continue to escort that king back to the city. And that's the word Paul uses here. Now, he's writing to people, Thessalonians, who are steeped in a Greco-Roman environment. They know these things. This is the environment they grew up in, where kings would do this sort of thing and dignitaries from the city would go out to meet that king and they would usher him back to the city. So the image here is absolutely not that believers will be sort of caught up, meet Jesus halfway, and then go back to heaven. Because again, this passage is talking about the return of Jesus. Jesus is coming to earth. Jesus is returning to raise the dead. That's the main point here in 1 Thessalonians 4, 13 to 18. Unequivocally. I mean, this is just clearly what he's talking about. So this is talking about Jesus' return to earth, whereby believers will go out to meet Jesus and usher him back to his kingdom. His kingdom on earth, where he will reign forever and ever, where there will be a new heavens, a new earth, a new creation. So let me say this. If there is an actual rapture, which, you know, it says we'll be caught up together with Jesus in the clouds and meet him in the air. Is this symbolism? Is this imagery? Is it literal? Let's just say for the sake of the discussion, it's literal. And say that there is some sort of caughting up in the clouds-ness. There's some sort of rapture. I hate even using the term rapture because that just has so much baggage. But let's just say believers will be caught up and they will meet Jesus as he's returning to earth during the second coming. Then this is not a pre or mid or halfway through or three quarters of the way through rapture thing happening. This is simultaneous with the second coming of Jesus. So where do we get the whole seven-year tribulation? Well, it comes from the book of Revelation, and also it's squozen out of the book of Daniel, but I don't think that it can. Daniel's really talking about that at all. But it's coming from the book of Revelation, where you have references to a seven. Well. You have a lot of numbers in the Book of Revelation. For instance, you have where's that the two witnesses. It says that I will grant Revelation 11:3. I will grant authority to my two witnesses. They will prophesy for 1,260 days. That's halfway. That's 3.5 years. Okay. So it has these numbers kind of sprinkled throughout the Book of Revelation. Here, so let me say this. The pre-tribulational rapture view depends upon a particular interpretation of the Book of Revelation that takes the numbers literally. In fact, it takes a lot of stuff very literally in Revelation. Not everything. I don't think any human being alive is going to take everything in the Book of Revelation literally. But the pre-tribulational rapture view certainly takes a lot of the numbers literally. It takes the 1,000-year reign in the Book of Revelation in Revelation 20 literally. It takes the 144,000 Jews in Revelation 14. It takes that literally, and it takes these 1,260 days literally. It takes a lot of stuff literally, and it also views Revelation as speaking almost exclusively about end time stuff, like end times from our perspective. Now, so this is a bigger discussion that we just can't go into on this show right now. Maybe at a later show, we'll do a series on Revelation. But after studying Revelation a few years ago in detail, I have come to the conclusion that while this book is very difficult to interpret, once you look at the genre of first century Jewish apocalyptic literature, once you look at this book the way the first century readers would have looked at the book, it is nearly impossible. Well, is that too bold? It is very difficult. Let me be a little more diplomatic. It's very difficult to interpret this book the way that pre-tribulational rapture people interpret the Book of Revelation. Let me be bold here. My PhD is in first century Judaism and the New Testament. So I studied this stuff in great detail. Let me say this. I'll be bold here because it's just true. When I encounter truth, then I need to be bold, I guess. That's what the Bible tells me. How's that for a trump card? No first century reader of Revelation, the Book of Revelation, would have interpreted it the way 21st century or 20th century pre-tribulational rapture advocates would have interpreted this book. I would go to the grave on that. Now, I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying first century readers are correct. Maybe they all had it wrong. Maybe this book is to be interpreted differently than other Jewish apocalyptic books. But there was a distinct genre in the first century. If you want the name of other books, there's a book called Second Baruch, For Ezra, First Enoch, especially the middle parts, chapters 37 to 72-ish, if I remember correctly. There's even portions in a book called Pseudo-Philo and many other books in and around the first century that were Jewish apocalyptic books. And these Jewish apocalyptic books talked about political events in their own time and used the sort of fantastic imagery to describe those political events. When you read the Book of Revelation alongside other Jewish first century apocalyptic books like For Ezra and Second Baruch, which are written right around the same time, they're using the almost the same images all over the place to describe first century political events. There is some future stuff in the Book of Revelation. Revelation 19, 20, 21, 22. But the bulk of the book that pre-tribulational rapture advocates say is talking about the end times is actually not at all talking about the end times. It's talking about first century acts of God against the political atrocities of the day. Oh, we're out of time, folks. Thanks for joining me on Theology in the Raw. If you have any questions, email me, pmsprink@gmail.com. That's pmsprink@gmail.com. We'll see you on Monday.
For more information about Preston, please visit his blog, Theology in the Raw, or his website, prestonsprinkle.com.